Members, I'll call the meeting to order without a gavel. I don't see my gavel here yet, or my committee administrator. Commissioner, welcome. We apologize for being late. Your Republican colleagues were causing us a little trouble on the floor. So, all right, Bob? So welcome, and we're looking forward to your interpretation of what's going on in the stimulus bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. In the audience are a number of subject matter experts, part of the DEED team, and we'll call on them as you have specific questions. Our intention is to work from a spreadsheet that was provided that's in your background. It looks like this.
I see it now, Commissioner.
The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act was signed into law on February 17th. It includes money that for which DEED has responsibility in three major areas. In two programs involving business and community development, in a large number of programs involving the Workforce Development Division, job training and services to those with barriers to employment, and to the Unemployment Insurance Program. All of the money over which we have custody was appropriated in federal law to existing federal programs or is competitive on a national basis. And we have indicated in the type of funding, whether it's formula, competitive, or federally discretionary. In some cases where there's federal discretion, we have an estimate from our federal partners. In most cases, we do not yet have federal rules. The Department of Labor in the bill was given until 30 days from passage to determine rules, and so we expect their rules by March 17th. In fact, we've heard from Employment and Training Administration that we will have them on March 17th, which is the last day they can do so under the law. We have not yet heard from the Department of Education as to when we may have more guidance on vocational rehabilitation, state services for the blind, Centers for Independent Living, and their programs, or from we think we know what HUD and the EPA will are, what their rules are, but they're not yet final. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to begin with on page one of the spreadsheet, business and community development. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency Brownfields Loan Program. We operate two programs for Brownfields. One is grants and one is loans. The loan program is the one that got additional money through the stimulus bill. We estimate that Minnesota will get a total of $5.4 million, but we normally would expect $3.4 million in the normal program. So it's about a $2 million additional allocation or appropriation of federal funds. It will be used to make loans, and there are some additions to the eligible entities from our normal program, and some complexities as to for which type of grantees parts of the loans can be forgivable. And I can get into as much detail of that, and we have people here. All right. Second piece is the Small Cities Community Development Block Grant, which is from the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Commissioner, if I could just ask you a quick question on the cleanup money. Yeah, are you fast-tracking the grant cycle on the May 1st there, which just to get that money out like it's intended?
That's correct. We are going to move, if that's faster than we would normally be able to do this, because and we may have to do it in two pieces, one for the stimulus money to follow the law.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to move quickly. For two reasons, Mr. Chairman. One, it creates jobs to do the work, but secondly, it makes land available that may create opportunities that come either from other parts of the program or from general. There's a good return on investment to communities from cleaning up brownfield sites. The second program is the Community Development Block Grant Program. There is total for Minnesota about $15.5 million. $9.8 million of that is for the entitlement cities and counties that get CDBG entitlement money. It tends to be the larger cities and counties. $5.56 million of that is for the small cities to compete for. We have always had a small cities program. We typically get $17 or $18 million for small city community development block grant programs. These are cities outside the metropolitan area and that are not in entitlement counties or cities. And we will we're going to administer this, hopefully having a grant determination by April, Mr. Chair. Those are the two in community development. In the Workforce Investment Act area, or the Workforce Services area, there are a large number of appropriations and a large number of programs. The Department of Labor's name is the Employment Service Operations. It's administered under a federal law called the Wagner-Pizer Act. We sometimes call it Job Seeker Services. Minnesota will receive just about $6.9 million. Under law, it's used to provide assistance to applicants in our, or to people in our workforce centers, and needs to be spent on what the law calls merit staff. So we have always used state employees for this. This will enable us to hire up to 60 temporary employees to add services to workers in our workforce centers, Mr. Chairman.
And Commissioner, what is the little blurb there about the technological enhancements that Minnesota Works net?
We have one, and I can bring David Nierman up to help me with the details, but there is a small amount of money we may use to better connect MinnesotaWorks.net to the unemployment system, Mr. Chairman. So if a worker signs up for unemployment and indicates their job separated, that they're not likely to be called back, that they could automatically sign up for MinnesotaWorks.net. And one of the allowable uses of the Wagner-Pizer Fund would be to make that connection. We've talked to our colleagues in Wisconsin who made that connection earlier and found it helpful to their applicants. So it would be our intention, when you sign up for unemployment, you wouldn't have to go to another screen or another place to have your resume or to create a resume for the data exchange. The next item, the Workforce Investment Act. The first of them are competitive job training grants, and there are two pools of money. They total $750 million. $500 million is, and these are all competitive. There's no state entitlement on these. $500 million is reserved for energy efficiency and renewable energy industries. And $250 million in high growth and emerging jobs, but there's language in the bill giving a preference to health care. Eligible applicants are community colleges and technical colleges, and they often partner with workforce investment boards. We'll be assisting by providing labor market information and job opening information, but the applicant for that money, Mr. Chairman, was likely MinSU institutions, although the University of Minnesota could also apply. But it will not be coming directly through these. Because it's in the Workforce Investment Act, we included it, and because this committee also has jurisdiction over higher education, we included it on this worksheet. The next section is the Adult Workforce Investment Act. It was distributed to Minnesota by formula. It is estimated to be $6.952 million, or approximately $7 million. 85% of that will be distributed to the workforce service areas by formula. And the formula is based on the size of the workforce, and unemployment rates, and income.
Commissioner, can I just interrupt you for a minute
welcome
and recognize the 11th and 12th grade students from McCrae High School, which I believe is in my roommate, Representative Junkie's district. So you've got a really good representative. I've taught him a lot over the years. Welcome. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Workforce Investment Act adult money is used to help people in workforce centers. Much of it can be used for training. Since this is in addition to our normal allocation, we hope a disproportionate amount will be available for training. We work with our workforce service area partners. The actual decisions are made by workforce investment boards in each local area, in the city of St. Paul or Ramsey County or in each of the WSAs. 85% of the money is distributed by formula. 5% is available for administration, up to 5%. We're hoping to use less than that. And 10% is flexible to be used for purposes that are in our workforce plan and that are allowed under the Workforce Investment Act. The second section is the Dislocated Worker Program. And this is the federally funded portion of help for those who are dislocated. This is just to put in context, I think, and if Ann is here, I think the total distributed to workforce centers under federal funding was around $10 million. So this is 200% of what we have in the past gotten for a year. So this is a big help to dislocated workers. The formula is that it goes 60% to the WSAs, workforce service areas by formula, 25% for large layoffs, up to 5% for administration. And there is some additional record keeping, but we will not need. We will use less than 5%. And then 10% is flexible between small layoffs and large layoffs. And we'll work with our WSA partners as to how that is needed as we see how many more very large layoffs there are. And it works in concert with the state dislocated worker fund. But this is a very large appropriation for that program, and it's helpful because it can be used for training, can be used for miscellaneous expenses as approved by the board. It's very flexible money. The third piece, or actually fourth piece from the workforce investment, is for the youth program. This, again, is a dramatic increase from what we've had available in the past, $17.8 million. It is allocated 85% to the WSAs by formula. 10% is flexible for other WIA eligible purposes, and up to 5% for administration. We do not haven't finalized a plan as to how we would recommend using that flexible money. I have said that I want the youth money to stay in youth programs and the adult money in adult programs. This is a great opportunity.
Doesn't the youth money have to stay in the youth program for federal action?
The federal 10% has a little flexibility, but we think that we're going to keep it there, Mr. Chairman. We think by common sense it should stay there.
And Commissioner, are you going to use some of this money to replace the cuts that you made in a number of those youth programs, or the governor's budget cuts?
The money will go to those WSAs, Minneapolis and St. Paul, for example, by formula. Because they have fairly large populations, they get a fair amount of formula money. We don't have the authority under Workforce Investment Act, for example, to create a separate grant to a not-for-profit, to Twin Cities Rise, for example. But those two youth programs will get a significant amount of money under the federal formula. And the federal formula, this law changed the definition of youth. It had been 14 to 21, and it's now 14 to 24. And I've had a chance to talk to some of those who administer these programs, and they're very excited about being able to go up to 24 years old. And it's for people who are neither school attached or work attached, and could help, for example, get people into apprenticeship programs. It's very helpful at this time when youth jobs are particularly hard to come by. I've been out visiting some workforce centers, and this is one of the portions of the stimulus bill that is really good news, and it will get to work quite quickly. National emergency grants is nationally competitive. There are no state allocations, but this added $200 million to the national emergency grant program. We have several applications either in or pending. One is to address large layoffs in the automotive-related manufacturing area. We're working on another one that would help in the high technology area, such as Hudson's and Tech. We will be aggressive in applying for national emergency grants. There's no guarantees, but we're likely to get some. The Senior Community Service Employment Program is a program that's been around since the late 60s or early 70s. It provides assistance to low-income seniors, and they're essentially hired for community service work. Much of it through vendors like Experience Work, some of it through local workforce service areas. We will receive an additional $729,000 to help seniors who want to work. Trade Adjustment Act dollars is competitive. The one big change here, in the past, Trade Adjustment Act was only eligible for manufacturers who may have had layoffs due to foreign competition. It now would be available for service employers who have layoffs that may be due to the outsourcing of jobs internationally or international competition. It might help computer service, software companies, people who had not qualified for the Trade Adjustment Act in the past. Trade Adjustment Act provides additional unemployment eligibility and job training to workers whose jobs are lost because of foreign competition. USIL is a program where that will not come through our agency, but I know there's interest in the legislature. It is a nationally competitive program. The Department of Labor will use an RFP process, and the Minnesota Youth Works programs will be able to compete for a share of the $50 million. We don't have an estimate as to what that would be, but it could be, compared to their normal budget, a fairly significant improvement. There are two appropriations related to Centers for Independent Living. There's two appropriations related to programs for independent living. One for the centers, and that's an addition of $1.2 million. The distribution of these dollars is dictated by a state plan in which we work with the state advisory commission, and they'll be agreeing on an allocation formula with our rehab services team. This is also a significant increase. The priority here is to support services in areas where we already have service and to expand services if possible in areas that are not now served. I'm just looking over at the Phil's Wizards. Did I get that right? All right. Good. David Hancock is here representing the Centers for Independent Living. There's also a small statewide program for independent living that will receive a $200,000 approximately in additional resources. The bill also provided additional resources recognizing those who have barriers to employment and are served by vocational rehabilitation and state services for the blind, have greater barriers during these difficult economic times and can benefit from additional services. We're expecting $6.3 million to our rehabilitation services, both rehab programs, and it is intended to avoid our having to go on a waiting list, and we've been able to avoid that, and to provide additional services to those who need services. We're also expecting $1.4 million in additional services for state services to the blind for their vocational rehabilitation program. And then two other blind programs that are not as oriented toward employment, but more toward independent living. Independent living services for the blind and older blind will receive a total of about $625,000 under the bill to provide additional services. And Chuck Hamilton and Kathy Carlson from State Services are here if you have specific questions about State Services.
Representative Reiner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, to that point, I've had a number of groups over the last month and a half that work with that are participants in these services talk about, I guess, what they would define as an increasing move away from counselors that work with those programs who either have a vision impairment or at least have specific training in that area.
If I could ask Chuck or Kathy Carlson to come down and help me. Kathy, if you'd introduce yourself for the record and then...
Welcome, Ms. Carl.
Thank you. Kathy Carlson with State Services for the Blind. In our older blind program, we have moved to using more individuals in our vocational rehabilitation program, using vocational technicians to rehabilitation technicians to work with the counselors to help with some of the work that needs to be done. There is much more to do than the counselors can accomplish, so the rehab technicians are working with the counselors and the customers to carry out the work that needs to be done.
And those folks, Mr. Chairman, and those folks aren't necessarily then people, I guess the way the folks that have talked to me say, they're not people that always appreciate the real vision impairment that people using these services have.
Well, I would...
This is Mr. Chairman and Representative Ryan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ryan, I would hope that our staff are able to communicate their knowledge of blindness and the need that individuals have for services to remediate the barriers that come related to blindness. All of our staff have been trained in adjustment to blindness, training in how to do things under a blindfold that you would ordinarily do with sight. So they have had a fair amount of training and are aware of the barriers that do come to people who need services.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't take up the committee's time, but having grown up with a legally blind and a completely blind sister, being trained and being impaired are two different things. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just kind of to that point, Commissioner, Ms. Carlson, so how much input does the will the blind community have for, you know, what seems to be a pretty good chunk of money compared to what they normally get?
Mr. Chairman, we have a Disability Council for the Blind that is, I believe, 15 members, and Ms. Carlson can speak to their role, but they're very involved, and they are very faithful attenders at council meetings, even though it's difficult for some of them to get to meetings, and they will be heavily involved.
Okay.
And
any other questions on the Independent Blind Services? Okay, thank you, Ms. Carlson. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Chairman, I'd like to ask Lee Nelson to come up. There are some of the areas under unemployment are fairly complicated, and I'll do my best, but I think it'd be helpful if Lee were here. Mr. Nelson is
Is very knowledgeable in all of this, so we'll see what we've got here.
Mr. Chairman, there are some areas in this spreadsheet that will go directly to those who are eligible for unemployment insurance, and some that come to the trust fund and some that come to the program, and I'll do my best to explain the differences. Under the ARRA, there is a supplemental benefit of $25 a week paid to those who are eligible for regular benefits or an extension from now until December 31st, 2009. We estimate that that will add $181.5 million to the benefits paid to Minnesotans. The first day for which their people are eligible is February 22nd. We will be then making payments on March 15th. There was a fair amount of different law that applied and some rules, so there's some programming involved. But we will be paying people for a three-week period when we start, and then each week thereafter an additional $25. Under the law, it has to show up as a separate item, so that if they're on direct deposit, they will see a deposit for their benefit and another for $25. If they're on the stored value card, they'll see in their statement their regular benefit plus $25. The reason for that is that $25 was made, there's a provision in the law that says it's not subject to deductions, and so we needed to show it, and it's not charged back to a previous employer. So it needed to show up, and there was some programming involved. Second, the extension that we have been under has been extended. It had been going to expire, I believe it was March 30th, is that correct? And now that expires December 31st, it's for up to 33 weeks, and the estimated benefit to Minnesotans on that is $324 million. The next one is interesting in that under Minnesota law, if the unemployment rate is over 6.5% for three consecutive months, it triggers a statewide 13-week state-funded extension. Normally, those are funded 50% from the state trust fund and 50% from the federal trust fund. Under ARRA, under the stimulus bill, federal government took that over entirely, and we estimate that that's a savings to the trust fund and therefore employers and a benefit of about $58 million. The next one is an additional contribution by the federal trust fund to the state trust fund of $130 million. That's the equivalent of about 4 weeks' benefits at current rates. And we will have an updated financial picture for the trust fund, but this will extend the point at which we have to borrow money from the federal government to continue trust fund down. The next one under Title II is additional administrative dollars of $9.3 million that will enable us to make some of the system changes required under the Act, and there's many of them, and to provide dollars for overtime and for additional employees to cover the very high workloads that unemployment is experiencing at this time. So additional administrative dollars for unemployment. The next one is a very exciting, I think, tax break, recognizing that unemployment isn't ordinary income, and it makes the first $2,400 of unemployment insurance tax exempt for federal tax purposes for tax year 2009. To most Minnesotans, that's worth about $500. And we didn't try to extrapolate that to a dollar volume or dollar value, but it's a significant benefit to Minnesota workers. The next one is in the event, well, and I shouldn't say in the event, we will need to borrow from the federal government during 2010 probably. And the federal government has waived the interest on borrowing from the federal trust fund for 2010. We estimate the savings for the trust fund of about $21 million during 2010. Is there anything I need to correct? All right. With that, that covers the programs that come through the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to take questions.
So, any questions on the UI at all? One of council has informed me, Commissioner, probably Mr. Nelson, that there's also in the stimulus package allowances for $15 per dependent. Is that Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, members, the law provides that in order to obtain that $130 million for the trust fund, you have to enact various changes in the law. And there are options. There are a number of options that you can choose. One of the options, we have to actually do one particular piece, and then you have to do two out of four of the remaining options. One of those four is to have a dependence allowance of $15 per dependent. Administration has put forth a bill which would not include that because Minnesota has most of parts of other things. So we can get to that $130 million without having a dependence allowance, the cost of which is quite significant. So we don't have to do the dependence allowance. It's simply one of numerous options available. And we believe there are smarter ways to get to it, I guess, the incentive payment.
And Mr. Chairman, we did discuss this with the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Commission, and the two changes they're recommending are a change in making people who leave employment for to take care of a sick child, spouse, or parent under the Family Medical Leave Act. If they come back to work and are unemployed, they would still be eligible for benefits. And also a provision referred to commonly as the trailing spouse provision, that if you quit to follow a spouse to a new location for employment, you can be eligible. It can be an exception to the quit rule. And so those are in our housekeeping bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Commissioner McElroy or Mr. Nelson, on page 7, the Title II Assistance for Unemployed Workers and Struggling Families, you have a $9.3 million anticipated amount to the state. Could you explain what you intend to use that for? You have a bit of a explanation here to the far right, but I'd like a little bit more in depth if I could.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I have asked the unemployment program to give me a plan for that, but we are needing to work significant overtime because of the high number of people who are receiving benefits, and we are a little slower than I would like on appeals and adjudication. So we will be using temporary employees to do that. We also need to make some system changes to comply with requirements in the Act. And those are unfortunately not inexpensive. And so I will be able to give you an answer as to what percentage of the money will go for temporary employees and overtime and what percentage will go to technology, but that's generally where the money will go. Now, we're also planning to get some additional money from the U.S. Department of Labor because of our high unemployment rate, and that will enable us to have some additional staff that we hope to add to the reemployment program, and that some of whom will be in the workforce centers. The kind of the potential for backlog is principally in the more central function of processing a high volume of claims and in handling appeals on a timely manner. We this week have about 170,000 people between the regular program and the extension, compared to perhaps 90-some thousand at the same time a year ago. So the amount of claims that need to be processed is significantly higher than it's been in the past. And you know, there certainly are people who wait on the phone longer than I would like them to, but the average hold time has been in the 6 or 7 minute range. The worst hold time for people who may need a bilingual operator, have a very unusual circumstance, has been in recent weeks, perhaps 20 minutes. Earlier in January, it was longer. We're keeping up, but we work the equivalent of 26 FTEs of overtime, and I'm very concerned about people who work every Sunday since October, and we'll use some of this money to keep them from having to work so much overtime. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mahoney.
Commissioner McElroy, a very long answer. I'll just phrase it this way. Both the chair and I suspect other members on the committee, have been concerned about having it simpler to get unemployed people a conversation with a live human being versus a computer. Right. Is this $9.3 million going to address that particular issue? I feel bad that we get calls here, and Mr. Nelson has been absolutely fabulous when we call him and say, here's our constituent's problem, but it would be probably better spent if Mr. Nelson could work on other issues than making my and everyone else's constituent happy.
My short answer is yes. It will mean we'll have more people on phones, and the earlier pot of money, that Wagner-Pfizer money, will mean there are 60 more people in workforce centers who can help also, but there will be more people to answer questions on phones. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I hate to correct my boss.
Yeah, but we like it.
The average wait time last week was under 3 minutes. When people that was last week. So we're getting a handle on things quite a bit. Quite frankly, we are now timely in what we call adjudication, which is initial determinations on contested issues for the first time in history of the program. Never in history have we ever met federal timeliness. We now are meeting it. So we're doing some things. Other things are under a lot of time pressure. I will simply say this. The program has delivered to the commissioner a request regarding how this money will be spent and is currently pending before him, but there is a request for a number of temporary positions.
Yeah.
Okay. And members, I'm sure that Mr. Nelson, if you have any more questions on unemployment insurance, he has a wealth of information, and I'm sure he won't mind helping you with questions, because even I mean, there's so many different pots of money, it's kind of hard to wrap your hands around. So, thank you. Any other questions of the commissioner? Thank you very much, Ben. And then we'll get going. Representative Doty, House File 147. Hold on. Excuse me. Yes. Representative Doty, do you mind? We're going to do Representative Detmer first because the commissioner is here and that. So, Representative Detmer, you get a little more time than everybody else. Representative Detmer moves. House File 16 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus Higher Education Workforce Development Finance and Policy Division. Welcome, I don't have to welcome you, Representative Detmer, but I welcome your looks like entourage here, and we'll try to get this moving as quickly as possible. Go ahead, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'd like to, first of all, introduce the mayor of Hugo, Mr. Fran Muron, and I'm going to let him do most of the speaking today, but I just want to just point out something that before we watch the short video, many times they say a picture is worth 1,000 words, and so we have a well-done video to take you back to May 25th, 2008, when the devastating tornado came through the city of Hugo. I think many of you watched this on the TV, watched what was happening. And I think we all can remember where we were at on certain dates in our lives. I was on my way back down from up north Mr. Chairman. And I got a call. I got a call from one of my constituents saying that a tornado had ripped through the city of Hugo. And within just a few hours, I arrived down to the city. I came into the elementary school, the Onita Elementary School, which is right in Hugo. And I came walking in there, and I just couldn't believe my eyes what was happening. The city officials, the mayor, and the city administrators, Mr. Mike Erickson, and the council had a plan to deal with this disaster. Had it been put in place before? No, it hasn't. But it was put in place. And when I walked in there, things were being done for the community. They were organized. The leadership was there. They had a plan, and they put it in, and it worked. And it worked. Also, many local municipalities came in to help out in Washington County. Just to see everybody working together with a plan was just something that I just sat back and watched what was going on. People came into that elementary school looking for help, looking for leadership, and they found it. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Mayor Muron and have our presentation.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fran Muron, Mayor of the City of Hugo. If I may, I've also got with us today our City Administrator, Mike Erickson, who is behind me to my left, and Councilmember Chuck Haas, who is behind me to my right. Thank you very much for allowing us a brief amount of time. I know you're a very, very busy committee. You've got a lot of work to do today, but I want to thank you for allowing us a few minutes to be heard on this particular issue. The tornado that went through Hugo caused about $22 million in damage to the city of Hugo. We had one death as a result of the tornado. A young boy, Nate Pringle, died as a result of the tornado. Their house was totally destroyed. His sister was in very critical condition, survived the storm, but had some very life-changing conditions that the family is dealing with now. But we've been able to develop a relationship with that family. They have since moved to Shoreview to be closer to services for their daughter, who continues to recover from the incident. We had 19 different agencies involved in working with us at the city level, 250 emergency personnel that worked with us, and the governor came in. We had some time to spend with the governor along with Senator Klobuchar and Coleman during that incident, along with our local people, Senator Ray Vandeveer and Bob Detmer and Matt Dean also offered assistance. We've got a DVD that we would like to share with you, I think, at this time. Steve Johnson, who happened to live across the road from the Pringle family, the family that lost the little boy, worked and worked for KSTP, and he put together a DVD that we've shared with legislators, with other groups in dealing with emergency management situations. And we've provided copies to all of the residents of Hugo that cared to have a copy of this. And we continue to deal with the trauma associated with this tornado. In fact, we've got some counseling sessions and services that are coming up in April. But I think the DVD would be appropriate at this time. It's,
go ahead. That's fine. How long is it?
10 minutes.
Our hearts and prayers go out to the families who are going to be impacted by this.
My wife called and said, our house is gone, and the garage is gone, and all of a sudden it kind of got disconnected.
But in the tornado across the street, I was driving back.
You were in the tornado?
Yeah.
What happened?
I was coming back from another call.
This is a powerful, powerful, powerful tornado. This thing just, some houses just leveled.
Looked out my mudroom window there and saw it right there. And then I just scrambled around the corner and dived down the stairs and jumped into the closet with the family, and then it hit our house. And went for 15, 20 seconds and It was done.
May 25th, 2008. The day Hugo, Minnesota went from being a small town to becoming a large family.
There was reports now of touchdowns of a tornado in Hugo and in Forest Lake. That's just coming into us. So we're getting the latest on that. We don't know exactly where the damage is, but we do have reports of a touchdown that did occur north of Hugo, but not quite as the Forest Lake, probably in about that Highway 61 area and just kind of northeast of the city of Hugo.
Oh my God, the train!
And I picked up the phone, and it was Chris Petrie, our public works director. Chris had survived the storm at 5:01, called me at 5:04, and said, "Mike, the tornado hit. My house is all gone. You got to get in here." He called our other public works person at 5:05 and said, "Get the guys in here. We all have a role in a tornado and a disaster. We all have a role."
Hugo Fire for a report of a tornado that just touched down in Cedar Residence, 15749 Fenway Avenue North. 15749 Fenway Avenue North. And a tornado that hit the residence. Unknown injuries at this time. The house has collapsed. Time is 1703.
I'd like to begin, first of all, by expressing our condolences to the family that lost a young boy in this tragedy. A two-year-old boy was lost, and these other members of that family are, as I understand, in critical condition. There's a sibling that's 4 or 5 years old, and the parents have been injured. 17 people have been treated, and we have the one fatality. We've got some rough estimates on the number of homes that were damaged. We've got 40 to 50 homes that have been completely destroyed, and 150 to 200 homes that have been affected. And I would suggest that those numbers are very conservative.
Calmly walked up, and I'm seeing devastation like I've never seen it before. But I remained calm and, knew I had a job to do. I'm seeing people in their front yard, right in this area here, people standing in their front yard, just shaking their heads or crying or hugging each other. And I came right here, and right where we're supposed to be was our command center, right where he was supposed to be was our fire chief, right where he was supposed to be was our duty officer, Kevin Colvard.
Fire wiper ambulance has also been started. The second house hit is at 5850 159th Street. 5850 159th Street. We have multiple injuries. Multiple people are injured and people are missing. 10-1706.
It appears the tornado touched down around 20th Avenue North, right over this farm. One grain bin was blown off of its foundation and the others ripped apart. One farm building was destroyed while the one next to it is still standing.
A lot of the silo and debris blown right out into the field.
From there, the storm headed straight towards Hugo and Lake Onika on the east side, ripping through a neighborhood, the streets lined with single-family homes.
Looking at the homes and the severity of the damage, you can see that.
Right down 159th Street, many homes were simply flattened, with left of them blown into nearby ponds, and the powerful winds tossed cars around like toys.
Somebody's trailer turned upside down.
Some houses were moved intact off of their foundations. Those left standing lost roofs, shingles, and siding. Today, you can see crews from the power company already trying to restore order here.
Here on the east side of the debris field, you can see all those trees.
The tornado passed right over Lake Onika, where it toppled hundreds of trees, but spared two homes in its path. In all, more than 5 miles of devastation.
Our story got played out and told off throughout the United States, throughout the world, and all of our family and friends learned about it, and they all were praying for it. And that was pretty special.
4201, looks like we've got a dozen homes that multiple injuries.
4201, I copy. We have a dozen homes hit and multiple injuries, 10 to 17. 10.
This is the kids' room, and her bedroom space here, and that's where her master bedroom and master bathroom is. And we're looking for a jewelry box. That's really needs to find, so that's what we're kind of looking for, and we just heard that pictures are a half a block down the street.
We found a bathroom mirror, unscathed. After all of this, and absolutely nothing wrong with it.
This is the entry form to get back into our house. We haven't seen our house yet. And this is our path to drive up to the house.
We were in the house. We heard the sirens. We moved downstairs so fast. I got two of the dogs downstairs with me. We couldn't find the other one. And I told my husband, you can't worry about it now. We got to move. We went downstairs and we didn't hear a thing. We heard furniture moving. We heard breaking glass. That was it. This is our kitchen. That's our breakfast room. And there's our living room.
She goes in all directions. I mean, there's people from all over the place.
Until now, they only saw it on TV.
It's overwhelming. It's a lot worse than I thought it would be.
They were armed with rakes, work boots, and a will to help their neighbor.
Just to help, and just can't believe what some people have to endure, and I just wanted to be able to do what I could to help.
It's amazing to me. I just can't imagine something like this could happen to somebody.
Chad Peterson doesn't know any of the victims he's helping.
Leave him up. Number three. One.
And it doesn't matter.
If this could be me, and if it were me, I'd want help, too. You know, that's the biggest thing. You know, these people are going through a lot, and they need all the help they can get.
The biggest need today, raking debris-filled lawns.
Lots of singles.
Chrissy Dockery helped sort through the rubble with co-workers from Medtronic.
Nice.
She says she didn't think twice about spending her day here. She'd expect the same if she were the one in need.
I don't know. I think it's kind of a testament to Minnesota Nice. Is that, you know, pay it forward. Somebody will help you and you'll help somebody else. And
the more we talk about it, the better it is. And I thought... I thought I had come to grips with it. And I have, but it's still very fresh. You know, this day will make me stronger. It'll make me better. It'll allow me to process it all. They said it may take a while.
It started hours after the tornado hit.
Started out as a couple of coolers and maybe, you know, a box of granola bars.
Now, Sandy and Steve Anderson's home has become an oasis for tornado-weary residents and volunteers.
And then if you want to write down any needs they need, too, we can try and get that stuff.
Their home now turns into a store, but all of this is free.
Sunblock, you know, plastic bags, rakes, sanitation items.
Gloves, face masks, a suntan lotion, or sunblock has been a big one.
Since their home was there, they opened their doors to just about everyone.
We've got massages, we're doing a real restroom.
Yeah.
Come inside.
I might do that.
So.
And with help from their church, it's not just food or water. It's a mini city we're talking here. Daycare, massage, new clothes, diapers, and prayer.
Even though we're not trained disaster relief folks, from a pastoral sense, we figured it might be good just to be out here just to hang out with people.
So their house may not have been damaged, but the community was. Andersons say they'll be here until it heals.
God working in the neighborhood. It's just a community coming together, and I don't know, it's reaching out to our neighbors in the time of need.
We'll get better. We'll get strong.
see, Mayor, anything else we have to add?
Chairman, just very briefly, the real story behind this is the people in the community and how we've come together as a community after this whole event. And what a growing experience that's created a tremendous level of pride within our community. We were very fortunate that the natural disaster occurred on Memorial Day. Many people were away for the weekend, and I think we would have had a much higher loss of life had it not been for the weekend that this occurred on. The other aspect that we've been going around the state telling people, telling other government agencies, is that the National Emergency Management Systems training that we as a city council, our staff, had gone through, and many communities have not gone through that was very critical to us as we dealt with this situation. What you have before you, or should have, is the request in the dollar amount of $438,000. After the initial disaster and the governor had a chance to come in, he informed me that we could keep track of our costs associated with this disaster, that Minnesota and the legislatures had a history of reimbursing cities for those costs associated with natural disaster. You should have a letter before you. I recently talked to the administrator in St. Peter, actually on another issue, and he forwarded a letter with respect to the assistance that they had received from the state 11 years ago when the tornado went through St. Peter. And I know more recently other communities have had similar issues. The governor had asked at the time whether or not we could cash flow this. I assured him we could, and he was pleased to hear that and indicated that it could be brought forward during this legislative session, which I want to thank. We've had hearings both in the Senate and the House on this particular issue. The bulk of our costs associated with the disaster, about $100,000 associated with additional law enforcement under our contract with Washington County, and then debris removal, and I believe those costs are fairly well itemized. Yeah. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mayor and Representative Detmer, and you know it's not an easy session to find money, but I think your community deserves the help that others have, so we'll see what we can do. And Representative Detmer, you can help me find other sources of revenue too, you know. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to tell everybody here what great people these people are. I know all of them personally, and I want to thank Chuck Claus. He also gave me a personal tour of the site 2 days afterwards. It was absolutely devastating. And I mean, Mike Erickson, Fran, I don't know how your community would have handled it without your leadership. I also think that the school district should be thanked for their participation. The Onitsha School is part of the White Bear School District, and they put forward not only the facility, but a lot of man hours involved and did not ask anything in return for it. So.
Thank you all very much. And we'll see what we can do, and we'll talk to Commissioner McElroy to see what kind of funds he may have available, and I'll talk to my buddy Governor Palante about this too. So. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess we do need a vote on this, but the motion's been made. No, I moved it already to lay it over. So, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Representative Doty. And members, we could move all of these by electronically to the Capitol. Do you want to make motions to move them, or should we just do that? What's the will of the committee? Just to move them on to Capitol Funding Finance just by one electronic motion. So we're just going to hear these quickly. Representative Doty, welcome, and you got a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I know that you and many of your members are especially sensitive to the sometimes different needs of rural Minnesota and economic development. Last week, when the state unemployment figures came out at 7.6%, my two counties were 9.9 and 10.9, and City of Brainerd is well over 16. So we're sitting in a pocket that can certainly in need of economic development. I have with me today Mike Willemson, the chairman of the CERC committee for the multi-use facility that this bill deals with, to explain to you why this would be a good way to get economic development in our area.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today and help you understand the real need,
sir,
that we have.
Sir, just want to identify yourself for the tape. Identify yourself for the tape.
Michael Wilhelmson. I'm a chairman of the CERC committee for the multi-use facility in the Motley region. Some 2 years ago, there was a group of us that came together after attending the Blandon Leadership Program and looked for a project that was high on the priority of the area, and the city of Motley had in 2003 put a facility on the highest priority on their comprehensive plan list. The group has met over the last 2 years in the development of options that might be contained within that facility, and I think the economic impact that it can have on our community is that it brings together three counties, the tri-county area of Cass, Morrison, and Todd, and we have five townships up there in addition to the city of Motley. There is no congregating facility within the community that provides for our senior population or our children other than the middle school that's in that community. We've had gone through a survey process that has indicated that 70% of the respondents are in favor of the project and would look favorably upon supporting the project. We also have a former resident of the community that has been very successful, that has indicated that he would assist in a substantial way to help the project become viable. And so we look to you as to the request that would really kick off the ability for us to move forward in securing and creating this facility for our community. I think the fact that we have two colleges close by, one in Brainerd and one in Staples, that puts out students that need experience in the handling of community activities, gives us the opportunity to create an arena for that. We also, our major donor has insisted that a focus be given to the children of the community, and our efforts are being made in that direction. And it will bring more people to our community, because there hasn't, the primary gathering places are either in Staples or Brainerd. Nowhere is there one in which we can entertain such things as class reunions and wedding receptions and those types of gatherings. So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Wilhelmson. Just a quick question I have is what's the total cost of the project?
The total cost will be between $600,000 and $700,000.
Okay. Any other questions by the committee? Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This isn't really a question necessarily specifically for this bill, but I'm just curious. You know, I haven't served on this committee before, so I don't know what the past practices have been, but I'm just wondering, are we at some point going to take the time on these capital investment projects to give our priority list to the bonding committee as far as, you know, what projects we'd like to see funded first?
We just forwarded all of them the last 2 years, or for the last couple of years, to the Capital Investment Finance Committee. So I basically, let them make the decisions as to how they would prioritize it, which, you know, some members feel shouldn't be the case, and others agree with me. So would you prefer to prioritize them? Because we'd have to have another meeting to do that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it would be helpful, because when we're looking at I assume our budget, though, we're going to be looking at just priorities for the state overall, and I think that this plays a role in that, too, because, you know, some of these projects, not this one in particular, but some of these projects that we're going to see coming through here might have a ongoing expense for the state. Some may not. And I just think it would be wise for us to maybe give some more consideration to these and at least give the bonding committee an idea of kind of what we were thinking. Now, everybody has their own style approach, but I guess that's kind of the line of thinking that I was in. But, you know, you're the chair. You control how things go. So I'm just giving you my 2 cents. So.
Okay. Any other comments to that point?
Mr. Chair, I just had a question. Because I don't serve on capital investments, I'm just wondering if these would have been something that perhaps the Capital Investment Committee would have actually visited, or
they would visit them, you know, in the next 2-year cycle, mm-hmm. this summer or something, but depending. I'm certain there are projects that have been visited that weren't on the, you know, the capital bonding in the bill last year that could possibly be done, and where if they're shovel ready, that if we're going to have a smaller bill, might be approved. But for these new ones, if they have been approved by the, you know, I mean, they'll be visited. We visited a lot of sites over the last couple of years, so, and I'm sure they will be visited. Representative Anderson, we can perhaps have another night meeting next week, and we can, you know, go over these bills as they leave this committee, if you'd prefer to do that. But I'll come around and talk to you and to the other members of the committee. You know, my preference is these bills are coming here because they've been rerouted here because of the request that deed handle the money. And so that's why they're here. But it's the Capital Investment Committee that's going to make the final decision as to what makes the bonding bill. So if you and I can have that discussion, then you got people that have come from a long way, so I'd just like to let them at least get out of here before 2:30, and then we can have this discussion, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Doty. And the next bill, then, is Representative Brown. Welcome to the committee, Representative Brown. And nice to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you have some, are you just doing this then on your own? Go ahead.
Just doing it on my own,
yeah,
so,
that's great.
So be nice, please.
Oh, you know, I always have.
I know,
that's
what I'm told. This is a proposal for Rose Creek for a project that will upgrade the street sewers. This is an existing system, and we're wanting to do some rehab. The project is a little over, my understanding is a little over $600,000, and we're requesting $422,000. It is on the PFA priority list, but it's such that it probably is not going to be dealt with real soon. So we would like to be able to get going on the project, and I'm told that also it is shovel-ready within 60 days.
Okay. Representative Brown, is the system failing? Are the sewer lines and that themselves failing, or is the lift station in need of repair?
My understanding is in both cases it's in need of repair, but it has not been listed real high in the priority list.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is actually a question for you. So I'm not totally getting the connection between some of these projects and workforce development. Is the connection that they're shovel-ready and therefore they could be job creation projects as part of the federal funding, or are these kind of on their own somehow?
No,
workforce development related.
These are coming here because if you see on lines, in this case on line 1.7 and 1.8, the request for the bonding proceeds is through the Commission of Employment and Economic Development, where usually sewer and water projects, even though that the PFA part of the deed has been pulled out of this committee now and put into Representative Murphy's committee, because all that clean water money and that is coming into her committee from the constitutional amendment. So Representative Murphy has PFA and WIP, which is normally these things are all going to hook up at the end of the session, right, in different bills. So Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, Representative Brown, did you say if this was on the list and where it's at on the list?
It's on the priority list. I believe it is 179.
Okay.
What's that?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, how many points does it have?
29.
And usually, Representative Murphy, about 42 or so?
Mm-hmm.
To reach for funding, Representative Anderson. So,
I guess, Representative or Mr. Chair, my concern is if you know we're just passing these through to capital investment. You know, I don't want this to come back to have folks say, "Well, you know, you heard it in your committee, you didn't raise an issue on in the committee that you served on." And I guess. I guess this gets to the issue that I asked you just a little bit ago, and we can talk about it offline, but I would feel more comfortable that maybe the speaker needs to change how she refers bills if we're not going to actually have any thoughtful contribution to how we prioritize these projects, then they should just be sent to capital investment. And I realize that's, you know, a conversation to have with the speaker, which, you know, I'll drop her an email, but this is my concern is, if we're not going to have put any thought into this, then we shouldn't be hearing these bills at all.
Well, there's a Representative Anderson. There's a lot of bills that get rerouted and rerouted all around here. You heard the discussion on the floor today, which Representative Zellers had the exact opposite opinion of you. He wanted to see them, those UI bills go through every place because it had the word insurance in it. So.
Mr. Chair, I think you misunderstand my statement. My statement isn't that I don't think that we should have a part in this.
No.
My statement is if we're going to treat it as if, you know, we're just a pass-through committee, you know, I don't like that. I don't have a comfort level with that. But I apologize for taking up committee time here. We can talk about it later. I'm sorry.
If you want to, as the lead, to not pass these bills out or to have a vote on it in a full discussion, I suppose we can have, you know, a 3-hour meetings every night because this committee normally gets a lot of deed bills. I mean, where the funding goes through deed. And we could probably sit around here and have this discussion. If you want us to hold these bills and then have full meeting where we prioritize them, I just go with the will of the committee, I guess, on that. You can, you know, lobby the committee to support you on that. I'm more than happy to do it.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know,
what you're requesting, Representative Anderson, is a good full discussion on this and then a prioritization. It's going to take some time to do that.
Certainly, and that's what we're all elected to do, is to give people careful consideration of all these things. And, you know, if you don't want to spend that time, and I'm sensing from you that you don't want to spend that time, you know, that's fine and well and good, but then the speaker shouldn't be referring these bills to higher ed. She should be just referring them directly to capital investment.
Well, maybe they should be referred to Representative Murphy's committee, too.
We should have done it Monday night.
Yeah.
But since we didn't miss the chair, I think it should move on to capital investments, and I think it should be able to accumulate and be worked on by Mr. Pullman, and so we can get those points up at a future time.
Okay.
Sometimes projects like this take 2 or 3 or 4 years to get the proper number of points. And so, but if they don't get the capital investment, then they kind of lull. And so I'm in favor of putting this down with the group that went from outdoor culture, our culture and outdoor resources. On Monday night.
Mr. Chair, I was hoping you could also offer a little bit more clarification. You said that these are projects that could potentially be toured later on this summer. So are we having a bonding bill this year, or are we just going to go with the regular bonding bill year next year?
I think there are many in the legislature who feel that a smaller bonding bill this year would help bump the economy up a little bit in the state of Minnesota, that we have some very high unemployment rates. You just heard the commissioner of Deed talk about how we're getting some extra money from the federal government because we are above the national average and unemployment. So I think there would be a bill. But we passed on out of here already some higher education projects. You may remember, Representative Anderson, we passed on to the bonding committee that were ready to go because they were vetoed by the governor last year. And I'm sure there might be some other projects that will be added to that that have been looked at and not received funding in the past, perhaps. But the projects that haven't been looked at, like these, might, you know, be on the list to go around and tour them this summer and the next before, or excuse me, this coming summer, as has been the practice in the past, so that they can be looked at and possibly make the bonding bill for next year. But it's not uncommon, as you know, that we have a bonding bill, a smaller bonding bill, the first year of the biennium. Okay. Thank you, Representative Brown.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Poppy, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say this is a small rural community, and they do have a high-cost infrastructure need.
Yes.
And I think it's always a good idea to have a local representative, Representative Brown, who is bringing this forward to be able to recognize for all of us that we have many communities throughout our state that have many needs, and we would like to just be able to carry it forward, and thank you for the opportunity today.
Are there folks that have come out of town with some of these bills, or okay, Representative Taylor, do you have someone from out of town? Do you want to come down? Is Representative Mansell here? Okay. Representative Taylor, come on down. Then House Bill 299.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Representative Phelan, and if your presenter could go quickly.
You bet. I'll actually just hand it over to Mr. Olinger, City Administrator from the City of Lindstrom.
Welcome, sir, and just identify yourself for the tape. There you go.
My name is John Olinger. I'm with the City of Lindstrom. I'm the City Administrator. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to come before you today and ask for your support for a joint effort that the City of Chisago City, Lindstrom, and the County of Chisago are working together to develop and recruit and lure Swedish bioenergy businesses to the City of Lindstrom. Lindstrom is a very well-known place over in Sweden. Many tourists come here. This is where Carl Moberg set his immigration series for the Swedish immigrants. We are requesting support for our Swedish Heritage and Wilderness Park to support our efforts at attracting these Swedish bioenergy companies. The parkland that we're looking at is 150-year-old Swedish homestead with an 1870 Swedish house. The land has never been logged, and it remains in its pristine pre-immigrant condition. The park will be used to showcase our Swedish history and our emphasis on environmental stewardship. The City of Lindstrom is the location of Carl Moberg's immigrant series chronicling the history of Swedish immigration to the United States. Lindstrom is well known to Sweden. It's host to the King and Queen of Sweden, the Swedish ambassador, and where 3,000 to 4,000 Swedish and European visitors travel every year to come and see us. The country of Sweden made a contribution to the development of the United States through us. And what we'd like to do is present a soft landing for companies from Sweden. They're a leader in bioenergy in the world. We've got a great platform for them, and we're welcoming them to our city and into our area. And we look like them, which is our best and strongest strength. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we have an amendment in the packet. We the revisers misspelled Almondstrasse.
Correct. I can speak Chinese, but I can't.
Yeah. Do we have a suite on here, the committee that wants to move it at all? So, well, Representative Hodge, then you move. Representative Hodge moves 8029981 amendment correcting the name Almondstrasse. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Representative Hodge.
I have no question on that. But I do have a guest here today that has traveled in, if we could.
Excuse me, Mr.
I
was looking for my gavel, so gavel you don't, and I don't have one.
Just pound your computer down on the ground. You'll be fine. Mr. Chair, I do have a gift today from St. Cloud.
Okay. All right. Representative Donald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You characterize this as a
kind of a park that would somehow attract, by virtue of its cultural value, green energy businesses. Could you just explain that a little more, why that would tip the scales in terms of bringing these businesses? Are there some that are already here? Just a backdrop on why this has a business development capacity for you.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Downey. The peninsula that you see is the wilderness undeveloped portion that will be the Allman's Rot Wilderness Park, Swedish for all men's rights. It's the notion that in Sweden all people can come and enjoy access, sort of a commons. Just to the west, but you can't actually see in the photo, is one of the three prime locations for that bioenergy development, the joint venture. And so the idea is that currently about 3,500 Swedish visitors come to the wilderness area to see what their ancestors saw in attracting them to Minnesota. And then you would stand in the 19th century undeveloped land looking out to the 21st century joint venture with the Swedish clean tech companies. We've had several visits. We actually have a trade mission, I think, returning today. Over there, and we'll be going again this fall. We have a great joint venture, and I think it's an exciting opportunity.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Downing, the bio community has been making connections with Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Scandinavian countries, and great degree over the last 2.5, almost 3 years now. It's been coming to a head in the last 6 to 9 months. This would be a very nice addition for these Swedish companies to come and feel much more at home. And being that they are leaders in some of the renewable energies, it does have some reason to be in front of us. Hopefully we'll have enough money to make it happen this year.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kalin, I'll get all those spins to come up to the range and we can make Nokia phones up there. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, did you say that you already have a local match for this then?
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, if I could let Mr. Olinger speak to the city of this project.
Right. At this point, we've already allocated about $500,000 that we are able to work out as part of this bonding. From the city. That will be a match, and then as it continues, we'll be looking for more money too. But at this point, we have at least that much.
Okay. Mr. Olinger, so what's the total cost of this project anticipated to be?
There are two parcels that we're looking at. One is the wooded area, which is $2 million, and then the peninsula, which is an additional $3 million. So totally, so
you've got well over 50% match then.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Representative. Representative Hodge, you had someone from. Does anyone else have a person from out of the area? If not, Representative Hodge. We'll go get Representative Liebling too. Representative Hodge, welcome to the committee. Well, wait. What am I welcoming you for, Representative Hodge?
I enjoy the welcome.
Yeah. Just your guest, introduce them, and we'll...
All right, let's just do that, and the guest is John Pedersen, and he is of the council in the city of St. Cloud, and we're back working with our civic center, which is a past project for the state and for the city of St. Cloud. It expands our 103,000-square-foot civic center. It will expand it by 50,000 square feet and renovate it by 39,000, and it is a $13 million project. And we will be matching for $13 million. With that, we'll allow our councilman to introduce himself.
Yep, my name is John Pedersen. I'm an at-large representative for the residents of St. Cloud on the City of St. Cloud City Council. As Mr. Representative Haas said, the important part of this bill is that the residents of St. Cloud right now are prepared to match that $13 million. We have already matched $2 million that the legislature very graciously gave us last year to get started with design and some land acquisition, and the residents of St. Cloud matched that as well through our food and beverage tax. So we're prepared or have matched or willing to match up to $15 million, which you have already provided for us last year. The surrounding communities are very much in support of this and are very grateful for that support. Just like other communities you've heard, we have an unemployment rate that was reported just this last week at 9.4% in our region in St. Cloud by our local media. The exciting thing about this job is that it would create 200 construction jobs right away this summer and then create 270 permanent jobs for this building and the surrounding businesses upon completion. This is going to be a current, very modern facility that will meet the business needs of those folks that want to come into town to rent it, because this building has really not been touched since 1988. And I can tell you that as soon as this building opened in 1988, we had industries that were looking for a larger facility in central Minnesota to rent. So,
and Mr. Peterson, this will enable you to attract much larger convention centers?
Exactly, yep.
Any questions of the committee? Thank you very
much. Thank you very
much. Mr. Chairman. Representative Liebling in the audience? Yes, if not, let's... Oh, sorry, Representative, I didn't see you there. Representative Liebling on the Rochester Mayo Civic Center. Welcome to the committee. Representative Liebling, you can just introduce your guest and we'll let him give
us
some information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Come back to have a seat here. And this is Brad Jones and Donna Drew.
Correct.
From... the Rochester...
I'm with the Mayo Civic Center. Brad is with the Rochester Convention. And
if you can identify exactly yourself and just give your presentation before you start.
Okay, well, I'm Tina Liebling.
You don't have to.
Representative from Rochester.
And
Brad Jones, I think he will talk to you from...
Yeah, before you start your presentation, just so that
Brad Jones, Executive Director, Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau.
And
okay.
Go ahead. Do you have any presentation at all on what the...
Mr. Chair, I think there's a handout. I see some members have that explains a little bit more about the project. I just want to say a couple real quick things about the project here. And, of course, this year we're looking for bonding projects that are going to create jobs. But I think more than that, we don't want to just build anything, because building anything creates some jobs. I think what we want to do is make sure we're building projects that are going to have long-term economic impact. I'm missing something here, I think. Anyway, this project, I think, is a very good strategic project for creating jobs and boosting Minnesota's economy. It leverages the resources in the Rochester area. It is not just another convention center for having conferences or for having concerts. This is for bringing in folks from out of state, even internationally, to add to Minnesota's economy, dollars that would otherwise not be in our economy. So this is a long-term outlook for the project. So I know you're pressed for time and you wanted to just have us very quickly. That's pretty much my presentation. The rest of it is there, Mr. Chair. I think this is a... if we're going to have a bonding bill of any size this year, I think this is a really good project that is ready to go pretty quickly and will have long-term economic impact well beyond the dollars that are spent.
Okay. Questions on the project? I see it's well over a 2-to-1 match, too. So, any questions at all from the members? Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the sales tax in Rochester. Is that being used as a local match?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Poppe. No, the sales tax is not. We have a, that was passed for other purposes, and it's going to be used for those other purposes. We have a bill that we're just submitting now to add 1% lodging tax and 1% food and beverage tax, which Rochester doesn't have currently. We currently have a 1% lodging tax, and we have a bill that would add those for the local match, just for that, very tightly tailored to provide the local match for this project.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, can you explain to me what is the regional or the statewide significance of this project? How is this going to benefit the people that I represent in Plymouth?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative Anderson. You know, I always like to talk about and think about us as one state, and I think it is important that we do things that have statewide impact. The Mayo Clinic is the largest private employer in the state, and it attracts people nationally and internationally, so you're bringing dollars into the state's economy. Mayo, as you know, isn't just in Rochester. There's a whole Mayo Health Systems component. Mayo trains residents who go all over the state. Patients come from all over the state as well to get treatment at Mayo. There's a synergistic effect there, just like any large employer that we might have in the state. And so when you're also in Rochester, you have other, we have now a University of Minnesota branch there. We have IBM there. We have CoSpi. We have the Hormel Institute, which is in Representative Poppy's area. There are a lot of bioscience kinds of resources that are there. The sorts of kinds of things that we want to attract and that this will help us to attract are major conferences. People, one of the things that happens is that when people come to Minnesota for a conference, they make connections here. They might decide to pursue research with someone they meet here. There are just all kinds of effects that happen from that synergy of having all these resources in one place. So this is the idea that this leverages those other resources in the sciences to help grow Minnesota in the biosciences. And those things don't only happen in Rochester. They spin out across the state. You can have people from other parts of the state, people from the U of M, coming to the center and engaging in conferences with people from all over the world on these scientific issues, and that's how you get this kind of a yeast that can make a lot of this grow.
Representative Anderson, any other questions on that? Seemed like a good logical answer to me. A little bit long, but that's okay.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, you know, though I respect your efforts to try and help out your community, and I appreciate the explanation that you provided, I still am not seeing the connection of how this is a statewide project. And I apologize for picking on you. I guess I've been listening to all of these different bills here, and it's kind of cumulative right now. This is kind of what I have deep concerns about, is that if we're going to see these bills in this committee, we need to give a little bit more thought to this and what our recommendations would be, because I really don't see this as meeting the standards of a statewide significant bill, and that's what our bonding bill is supposed to be about.
Well,
making sure that we're funding projects that
Anderson,
are on the statewide level.
I don't know if I agree with you that their bonding bill is about just about appropriating money just for everything that's going to be a statewide significance, because you can interpret a lot of things as statewide significance or a regional significance or what's important to one community or another. But we can have this debate if you would like and deal. We won't move these bills on yet then. We'll just have we'll talk about them again here. I promise you that finally, and we'll debate amongst ourselves and we'll prioritize them if that's what you wish. I represent Wealthy. You want to tell us the importance of this project?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Rukavina, and to Representative Anderson. One issue we have with the Rochester Civic Center, the Mayo Civic Center, is the fact that many of the people who come there for conferences, they're coming from out of state. So we're bringing in out of state dollars. When the people come here and they spend their money, they're paying, of course, sales tax, they're paying many other taxes, which definitely helps the state. And so maybe the one or two of the testifiers at the table could talk about the impact that the Civic Center has or could have as far as out-of-state dollars coming in the state.
Whichever one of you would like to comment on that.
Yes, thank you, Chair and Representative Welty. Thank you for that. In your packet, there's an insert, the loose leaf, which articulates just that point. We have lost business over the last 3 years, and as you can see, we've turned away 226 events. We've put some of those on the sheet, and just in these lost business items here, you can see we lost a total of $64 million to our community, but the state of Minnesota lost $46 million. just off these events. These are events that we're looking at, perhaps Boston, perhaps San Diego, other cities like Chicago, and that's that. We've also identified a top 50 client list that we've had discussions with, and they're very interested in the facility, but we cannot currently get them to Minnesota because the facility just doesn't match their needs. The expansion would. And those, just the 50 that we've identified, represent about $59 million in direct spending.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment on the importance of civic centers. I don't think we can solve this in the few minutes we have since we're over time here, but I think you really need to have some people talk about regional economies and the role of hubs and the health of the state economy, but it's very clear that regional balance is critical for the health of the state. So I think there's no doubt that these projects have statewide significance.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious as, you know, how many times some of these events have gone to other communities within Minnesota, Representative Haas's district, to the Minneapolis Target Center, to maybe the Excel Center in St. Paul. You know, I guess I'd be interested in knowing that as well.
Ma'am, did any of these not come to Rochester but go to Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. We do believe that there is a fair number of conventions that rotate throughout the state. We are, however, addressing primarily meetings that are above and beyond that, that would not come to the state and usually have ties to Mayo Clinic or the medical market in some way, or else they are looking at Rochester as a regional site for Iowa, Wisconsin, North and South Dakota. We are very centrally located for that. We are definitely going beyond what would circulate throughout the state. There is a regular rotation, and anyone who, from any of the cities here would recognize that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, then. Representative, we're going to try to go until we get kicked out of here. Representative, let's see, Anderson. House 485. Welcome, Representative Anderson. Can you tell us the statewide significance of your bill? Welcome to the committee. I'm just teasing you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The other Representative Anderson might ask you that, so go ahead. Just briefly tell us about your bill.
Thanks. First of all, this is my first bill here this season, and I guess there's a tradition of offering treats, so if anybody would like to avail themselves of one of my hard-earned Girl Scout cookies, go ahead.
Are they peanut butter?
coconut.
Okay.
Thanks for
talking. The other Representative Anderson, then.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I appreciate your consideration of House File 485, which authorizes bonding for the expansion of a multi-county Hope Douglas waste-to-energy facility. To me, it's a win-win green solution. And engineering for this expansion is nearly completed, so this is what I would call a shovel-ready project. Completion of the expansion could be done by the end of the year 2010. Energy at the Hope Douglas solid waste is produced in the form of steam and electricity. The steam is utilized by our current steam customers, 3M, and the Douglas County Hospital in Alexandria. And also Alexandria Technical College would like to utilize steam produced from this expansion of Pope Douglas. They also produce electricity, which is used, the turbines will spin the electricity turbines if the steam is not utilized by the other customers. So they do electricity and steam.
Representative Anderson, so what's the total cost of this project? The
total cost is about $19 million, $18.5 to $19.4 million.
And it's currently operating as a coal-burning facility? Or
no, it's collecting refuse garbage from two counties, and with the expansion, it would collect the refuge from refuse from up to five counties, neighboring counties. It's going to be an expansion of the plant, adding another burner to utilize garbage from a larger area and produce more steam and electricity.
It seems like a very good project and energy efficient and everything else. I have a large electric plant in my hometown that also heats almost the entire town. Representative Mahoney. Okay, no further questions then. Thank you very much. Representative Olin.
Mr. Chair.
I'm going to take one more here because Representative Olin's been so patient and I apologize to him.
Mr. Chair.
And I should have probably not let me, I should have probably had Dee go first.
I'd like to move the minutes.
Okay.
February 26th, March 2nd, and March 3rd.
Oh, thank you, Representative Mahoney. Any questions or additions to the minutes? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. That motion prevails. Representative Olin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for taking me today. And I was running in between meetings, so I was not having any problems waiting. Today, my project is directly related to the city of Kennedy up in Kitson County, which doesn't come along and ask for money very often, and yeah, it's about as far out of the cities as you're going to get. So it's funding for $300,000 to convert what used to be an old school that's now owned by the city because the school district combined and closed down the Kennedy School and moved their actual school to Hella. So what it's doing is it's converting into solar energy with the assistance of Dan Jewell, who some of you might have heard of. And the goal is to create a green business incubator to foster jobs. Now, there are three jobs already lined up, or three businesses already lined up to go into this place: Next Generation Power Systems, Todd Company, and the Jewell Wind, which will be a wind turbine operation that's going to go outside the city of Kennedy. This is going to be the office for the operation. And basically, it'll create a whole bunch of jobs. A lot of the expenses that would be considered match, I can't give you an exact dollar sign, but you'll have to provide it. But Dan Jewell is actually assisting the city in meeting some of those requirements. The building's owned by the city, but Dan Jewell will be one of the renters, so he is doing a lot of stuff at cost. So there is some match money under the table that I should really have a number for, which I have to apologize I don't have right now. But that's, in a nutshell, what it's about, and this handout tells you a little more about it.
Thank you, Representative Olin. Any questions? If not, thank you. It seems like a good project. And Representative Houston has been so patient up there, and you've got 2 minutes, and then we're going to get out of this. Representative Eakin, welcome to the committee. House File 1109.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. This bill is based on a study that was just done. That was through appropriations made a couple years ago here to look into the possibility of a cellulosic ethanol plant up in our area on the White Earth Reservation, and it was done in conjunction with the University of Minnesota and the tribe. The study found that cellulosic ethanol really wasn't ready to go yet. There's still significant developments that need to be done before that's ready to go. The grass supply also is not ready to go yet. But they proposed a pellet plant that would be using wood pellets and later grass pellets for the purposes of heating the casino and individual homes in that area. And it would also act to stimulate demand for grass supplies because it could be used for grass pellets as well. And the hope is to use 3,000 acres to start growing the seeds necessary for prairie grasses that could be used for cellulosic ethanol later. So it would be ramping up to that day when there's new forms of energy that are there to take advantage of these grasses. It would also, the wood pellet plant would certainly put people to work and create a payroll that would probably be in excess of $1 million a year. It also would save money on heating and I think set us up for some long-term future success in the area of alternative energy development.
Well, Representative Eakin, there's a number of these projects that are looking at local energy sources instead of shipping out our money for fuel oil or
right.
gas or coal, so maybe you can get us a number on this before, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I represent him.
Mr. Chair, do you know of any of those particular
states? I've got a bunch of them, I guess. So. Members, we're going to adjourn now. Representative Murphy.
I move that we pass the bills that we heard on the agenda on to the Capital Justice Committee.
Okay. Representative Murphy, you've made a motion to do that then. The ones we've heard to pass them on to the next Finance Committee. Are there any questions or Representative Downs?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wanting to respect Representative Anderson's questions. Perhaps we could just hold that motion until the start of the next committee and see if there isn't maybe a broader interest on the committee to have a more thorough hearing and give a thumbs up, thumbs down, or a prioritization before just passing these on.
Representative Murphy, would you honor that request to the same? I don't want to start trouble till a little later on. Okay. Representative Murphy, I know you're frustrated with it. I know you are, but we'll hold off and I'll have a discussion with Representative Anderson. Okay, with that, members, meeting adjourned.